It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody, and Happy New Year. It is Monday, January 4th, 2021. It's so good to have you back here with us in the new year. Happy New Year. Hope you had a great holidays. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And again, we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment to you is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Today, we have joining us Dr. Michael Fratantoni, who is the Chief Economist and Senior Vice President of Research and Industry Technology. And we're going to be discussing his economic forecast. 2021. Really looking forward to that. And talking about what we have to look forward to in the new year. We do that every year, and he's gracious to join us in every one of our podcasts at the beginning of the year. So stay tuned. We're going to have him on at the Hot Topic segment. I want to say thank you to the Industry Syndicate. We're pleased to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com as well as mortgagemedia.com. Pleased to have a partnership with both of these organizations, and they invite us in because we're the granddaddy, which means we're the oldest out there. At 70 years old, maybe I am the oldest podcaster out there in a while. We've been doing the podcast for a number of years, and it's great to have you with us. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We've got Michael Fratantoni on today. We had Marina Walsh on in September 14th. Did a great job talking about what the cost is. We're looking at where things are added with the organizations, the cost structure, the underwriting salaries, all salaries across the board. So we'll get Marina back on and give us an update on that. Also, I was just talking to Finastra, who will be our guest next week, talking about some of our recent survey that Finastra did. Again, Finastra is the third largest fintech company in the world. They do a great job with a mortgage bot fusion system that they have. They also have a new product we're going to be talking about and a survey. So be sure to stay tuned for next week's podcast. Also, we want to say thank you to two collaboratives that are out there. Lenders One, one of the original ones, and we're pleased to be members of that. Justin DeMolio was on in June talking about that. We'll be getting him back on, talking about all that's going on with Lenders One, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. We had Tom Gallucci on. Again, congratulations to Tom being promoted to Senior Vice President. He was on December 7th. Really appreciate both of these organizations we get to be a part of. They do a great job of helping members get up close and personal with each other. They've got peer surveys and things like that. You know, either one of these organizations do not replace the membership of the MBA. So they'd be really, really clear on this. What these two organizations do is give you a chance to get in a tighter community. So I'm a big proponent of both organizations. If you had to choose, you got to choose the MBA, of course. But if you have the ability, and I think everyone should, consider being a member of one or both of these co-ops. Also, we had Michael Jones, the current president with CMLA, who is on September. Also, Indicom, who has a great job providing automation, outsourcing, and compliance solutions to the mortgage industry. We had Linda Bomar on. That was August 31st. Also, Accelerate, we had Josh Friend on in August. Again, all the technology. I was talking to one of my clients this morning. The key is keeping your costs down, but using the right technology. You got to check out Accelerate and what Josh Friend has developed on working with borrowers, helping you get up close and personal and engage with them. They had a great tool there, as well as Innovient. I love what Ted Kramer has created, was doing your secondary marketing. They optimize your pricing and your executions. Go back and listen to the interview we did with Ted Kramer on December 14th. It was a real good interview and answered a lot of questions. We had a lot of loan officers contact me after that interview saying, that was a great interview. I learned a lot. And so get a hold of Ted Kramer at Innovient, as well as Knowledge Coop for a training. If you're looking for your own learning management system internally for your company, check out Knowledge Coop. Then we have Mobility RE and Modex. Both of these companies do a great job at helping you recruit LOs, looking at empirical data, really what someone's doing, as well as each of these two companies have slight nuances. I have more and more clients of mine that are saying, we've actually wanted to go with both solutions because of how they complement each other. So anyway, check them all out on our webpage on the Lickin' Lending podcast. We're going to jump right into Les Parker's TM Spotlight with this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
And we can restore growth together. standing free forever. Nothing's gonna stop us now. The weak dollar persistently supports an increase in rates. The Fed keeps supporting low rates for mortgages. President Trump's established COVID-19 and economic policies sets the USA up for a great recovery in 2021. Yellen and Biden are good at following roadmaps made by others, so rates should rise to 3.5%. Will the left wreck destiny if the Senate falls? The market does not expect it, and free people will not stand for it. They say nothing's going to stop us. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Always enjoy Les's music parody. He has Gary Kentrebone working with him and co-producing those. So thank you to those guys for doing a great job. Go to tmspotlight.com and sign up for Les's free newsletter. And if you put in the word power, as in power seller, you'll get the paid version at no cost. And that's being subsidized by our friends at Power Seller. Matt Graham is here, founder, CEO of MBSLive.net. And he is here with a market update. Matt, good to have you here. Happy New Year, friend.
Happy New Year, Dan. How you doing?
So good to hear your voice.
So let's talk about last week real quick. It was understandably pretty low key as far as the bond market is concerned, or was concerned in this case, because it was a 3.5-day week. There were not very many big fish to fry, and there are bigger fish to fry in the upcoming week, the one that we're in right now. So it was pretty calm. There was some risk at first. Sunday night, Trump signed the spending stimulus bill, and that was something that was always going to be a little bit of a stumbling block for the bond market because it involves more treasury issuance, and thus just a little bit of a upward implication on bond supply. Higher supply, lower prices, higher yields, all other things being equal. There was also some risk that Congress would take up this additional stimulus paycheck thing up to $2,000 from the $600, and that would have definitely had an impact on bonds. But we found out pretty soon into the week that that was probably a non-starter. And so the bond market really set about just grinding to a halt for 2020. That wasn't necessarily a given early in the week. You can always see some additional volatility at the end of the year, even at the end of the month, as traders shuffle positions on a somewhat compulsory basis for certain traders based on changes in certain indices that they have to match their holdings to and other positions that have to be closed or squared by the end of the year. But in this case, for December in 2021, we had apparently found the right range, the warm bowl of porridge already, and the 10-year yields just kept moving sideways in this 0.9 to 0.96 range. And yeah, that was it. Really not much impact from anything throughout the week. The treasury auctions early in the week, and especially the two on Monday due to the shortened week, those actually did produce a little bit of a bounce in bonds. So traders were probably defensively positioned for those, which is not uncommon, and rallied a little bit in bonds after that second auction on Monday. And then the rest of the week's data had no impact on bonds. The interesting piece of data for the housing market would have to be the Case-Shiller index coming 7.9%. That is the highest since 2014. And that those 2014 peaks sort of captured the big rebound from the meltdown. So super strong home price growth. Pending home sales told a similar story, 25.7. So that was a little bit lower than the previous month. But if you take 125.7 and go back into the past, you have to go all the way to 2005 to find anything higher than that. And even then, you know, that was peak housing bubble, and the levels back then weren't really much higher at all. So really still very strong housing market data, still very low interest rates, mortgage rates continuing to outperform treasuries. And let's talk about the week ahead.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that last week could have been so calm is that bigger fish to fry that we have this week. But I'm going to make you wait for that for a second. There is a ton more data coming out this week. I'm going to burn through it real quick for those that need to know. And then we'll get to this, you know, the big to do. So Monday's a slow starter. We just have construction spending. It's already out. It was roughly in line with forecast. Tomorrow, we have ISM manufacturing. Forecast coming a little bit lower than last time, but still expansionary at 56.6. Wednesday, with us as always, NBA apps in the morning. ADP, private payrolls from ADP coming in at 88,000 versus 307. So they're seeing a pretty big drop. Factory orders at 10 a.m. Nobody cares. Thursday, jobless claims 800K versus 787 previously. trade deficit that same time, 8:30 a.m. Then ISM non-manufacturing forecast to come in at 55 versus 58 previously. So similar contraction versus the previous month's numbers as seen for the manufacturing numbers on Tuesday. Then Friday, the big jobs report coming in also quite a bit lower than previously at 100,000 versus 245 last time. But the unemployment rate is seen staying the same at 6.7. So here's the big deal, Wednesday. And I think a lot of the country, even apart from the financial markets, are focused on Wednesday. And I don't know a thing about politics or when we're going to start to understand the results, but it's all about that Georgia Senate election. I don't think anybody is drawing firm conclusions based on those. But if it is possible, and if it does happen that Democrats win both of those Senate seats, then it gives them full control in the Senate and thus full control in lawmaking, and has everything to do with one party having control of Congress and the presidency, and that making it easier to spend money and thus affect interest rates. And just as a reminder, spending money doesn't always look like spending. In 2016, the same thing happened. It was the biggest bond sell-off we've had in years, and that didn't look like spending money, but the tax bill was actually another form of spending because it created a revenue shortfall that we had to use Treasury issuance to offset. So that was the cause of a huge, huge sell-off in 2016. And then one could argue that the positive economic impacts from lower taxes also drove rates higher. But the biggest reason for it was that the revenue impact from the tax bill. So bottom line, this could be the week where momentum finally returns to the bond market after being largely absent since, I would say, the presidential election. So not a good time to be complacent, good time to be on your toes, pay attention, use your favorite monitoring services like NBSLive.net, and use your LOL code at sign in for a 3 month.
No credit card required, but you should get one in there. You know Dr. Michael Frantoni, and he says, oh, I use it. And he says, you've had a number of the MBA folks. Talk about that. I mean, that's encouraging to see that the MBA is on your site and present. Even Bob Brooksbit is making comments on the live section at times. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. We're honored to have them. Sort of like the scientist studying the caveman, as it were. But we're a window into the front line.
Well, you do have a good window, and I encourage people to check it out. It's, again, the one place you have to go. What CNBC is talking about, they seem to cover a lot of the stuff. What's Diana Orlick saying? And so you go on there, and you can catch it all. It's just really great. So appreciate it. Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here. Let's get over to Alan Pollock, Mr. Technology himself. Hey, Alan, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good to be here. Glad that we made it to 2021.
Yeah. Do you see something coming that we should be anticipating?
It's hard to say because it depends on who you talk to. I don't get too excited because I know the truth behind a lot of the fancy terms. You know, we continue to use the word AI and machine learning and automation. The reality is, think of a car in assembly line, right? You can say that this car is built with AI, but it may be that only the tires are put on by a robotic arm that can determine how tight to make the lug bolts, but the rest of the car is not. And I think we still have a lot of that going on, right? We have a lot of independent components, and we're going to have that for a long time. Our industry, it's so complex. There's a lot of people working towards that. Blockchain is really going to be a big deal this year. I was on the phone with a vendor, actually probably beginning of November, and they talked about how they don't provide any metadata to the things that they do, the documents especially. But what they do provide is a blockchain this year where all the data will exist, and it's groundbreaking. And I said, well, what makes it groundbreaking? They said, because the data can't be changed. And I said, well, I get it. It makes sense. It's what blockchain is, but it's not groundbreaking just yet. And look, being on the tech side too, we have to work towards this direction. We have to innovate. But the industry's got some problems right now, right? Challenges. We've got a capacity issue. We've got the learn and train and grow from within. We've got a shortage of underwriters. We've got process to close a loan. Regardless of what it really is, David, and what the technology tells us, if you go interview borrowers and millennials, they still think it takes a month to 2 months, right? We haven't fixed that yet. Borrowers, new ones, still think that they can do things like you can't walk into a car dealership with a loan to get a mortgage. It just doesn't work that way. There's so much to know. You can get a car loan by a pre-approval online, walk into the dealership, show a pay stub, and you're out with a new car. So we've got to still leverage technology to make us smarter, but we have to make them smarter too. I know the whole industry is talking about, when you look at ICE, right? Like, what are they going to be doing? Potential privatization of the agencies. Does it bring a third player to the market? How does technology technology play a role. All the agencies right now are working on major technology plays. One is to identify the quality of loans up front, but mm-hmm. we've all been trying to do that for a long time, but also to be able to build a pipeline much sooner. And, you know, they're obviously working in where their future direction may take them. There's a right. lot of technology solutions right now, David, looking at capital markets, how to better your execution, how to understand where your risk is, how to better value loans that are being serviced, not lose, right, that prepayment risk, all those different things. So, but I don't see any one thing to answer your question directly. There's nothing that jumps out and says, God, this is amazing. This is brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're making progress, but it has been slow. I want to call everyone's attention to the series of podcasts we did starting in November 2nd, where we had Joe Tyrell on, did a great job. I loved his enthusiasm in that podcast. And then November 9th, we had on my good friend, Brent Chandler of Form Free. And then we had Frank Poison with Black Knight. And he talked about one of the big quotables that came out of the November 16th interview was, he says, it's not rocket science. It's worse. It's more complicated. We brought up Tom Showalter right after that on the November 23rd podcast. He goes, oh yeah, I am a rocket scientist. And I can absolutely tell you it's worse than trying to put someone on the moon. And there's so many moving pieces. It's so complex. And I think with what we have, it is always evolving. So yeah, I don't know that there's anything new, but we are certainly seeing opportunities for some things new. I'm actually having a couple of conversations with a couple of companies right now that are doing some things, and I need to get you in touch with them. So let's get into your report.
So much has changed with the pandemic. I don't know if you saw this, but there's a bunch of articles now about how podcasts are surging in popularity as people right. look to opt out from the news. And not only that, but podcasters have lost the commuter audience, right? The folks that would listen during their drive to work and drive home from work and walk around the building. But 18% of adults say they're listening more to podcasts. So it's really interesting. And Gen Z has really increased on podcasts the most. And I mentioned that just because as we look at new ways to enhance our business model and look at ways to attract that online buyer, it may be that a podcast is the direction that helps bring some education to your audience. Yeah. But also, I thought this was interesting. I was watching CNBC this morning and PayPal was out there and they said they found that consumers have a new trend. It's three things. They found consumers in 2021 are going to be focused on shopping and how that affects them financially. They're going to be focused on the big one, which is financial services, and they're going to be focused on digital payments. So financial services is really getting to be a big thing. And, you know, we talked about last week, know your customer, KYC. That's a big deal in financial services. So if you're a financial institution listening to this podcast, KYC is even more important to you, being able not only to understand who your customer is, but to maintain and manage that and build that experience around that, and then to use that data throughout. But David, KYC is also being a big deal in technology, because think about the ability to take a driver's license and scan that and be able to not only validate that that's the license, but then get a picture of the person, validate that that's who they are, and then pull in all kinds of data and autofill in the 1003 and take them through a verification process rather than data entry process, run fraud automatically, do all these different things. So KYC is a big deal. But I wanted to mention that because of just the fact that financial institutions are going to be focusing so much more again on financial services and digital payments, B2C and P2P. Also, super important, David, Fannie and Freddie, as we know, January 1st, the GSEs are accepting new loans on the new IRLA. But remember, March 1st, 2021 is the mandate for open production. So if your vendors are not ready with the new IRLA, or if they are and you haven't tested it, especially if you're taking data and using it for BI purposes and other things, remember, you can't delete old data fields. So there can't be a retirement of the field itself. There can be a retirement of using the field. But you do need to make sure that you've included and you're adopting the new field. So again, March 1st, 2021 is the mandate. So you should be focused on the new IRLA at this point. And then David, one of the thing I wanted to mention, you talked about new technology. One is Form Free. I did have something in the news going on with them. So Acrolis, they did a deal with, and basically what this partnership gives them access to do is to verify employment income and pay stub W-2 data. And they get to cross-reference the data and employer-borrower relationship against a whole bunch of data sources that they say is proprietary. So this helps provide more validation to the data, just not acquisition of the data. So good job to Form Free for doing that. And MCT also just rolled out an upgrade to what they call MCT Live, which is a pool optimizer. And it basically, they say it enables secondary marketing managers to use actual cash window execution for optimization of each of those loans. So if you're using MCT or you're looking in that direction, you want to talk to them. Building that technology, by the way, simple pool optimizer, but it is not, because all of the real-time data and the performance data that you need to update on all of those assets. And that is not a simple thing to do. So hats off to MCT on that. And with that, David, we could talk next week about the topic you brought up, having to do with being able to hire from within. There's some great stuff going on, being able to build the right technology leadership team, heading off to a great 2021. And I'm looking forward to hearing Dr. Michael Fratantoni's report coming up.
Yes, I am as well. A couple comments on this. Those that didn't catch the December 21st interview with Nick Hedges, who said, it's interesting, Dave, that it started with audio. Everyone wanted audio. Podcasts grew. And it shifted over to video. And guess where it's gone back to? It's gone back to audio. Audio only, because lives are so busy. You need to tell your story on an audio basis and communicate it audio. If you want to do video, they'll go back and check it out. He says, but the pendulum has swung back. And I follow experts like Nick Hedges. So top guy. I really enjoyed that interview. I encourage people to check it out. And also talked to a very good friend of mine is John Vong. And the point of, I want to reinforce what you were saying about private equity. That was really interesting. He told me the number of companies, and forgot the name of the private equity firm that was behind the acquisition of his company, but the number of acquisitions this company has made has been amazing. But what we're going to see in the new year is going to eclipse anything that we saw in 2020.
Different opportunity now. Joe, just to throw in one last piece there. To me right now, I don't think it's so much of opportunity for little companies and new startups, but more of companies trying to put together more of the pieces of the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's piecing together a strategy. We're going to have a lot to talk about. We may be talking more about M&A within the tech space than there is anything else, but I think there's some interesting ones coming out. So we'll talk more about that again in the new year as we get into this more and more. Thank you so much for being here for the first half of the podcast. Appreciate it very much, Alan. Blessings. Folks, we're going to move out of the market update and we're going to get into the hot topic segment. Welcome everybody to the hot topic segment of the Lickin' on Lending podcast. We have as our special guest, Dr. Michael Fratantoni, the MBA's chief economist and senior vice president of research and industry technology. Topic we were just on. Can't wait to get some of his perspective. And what we're going to be talking about today is the MBA forecast, really coming out of Mike and his team. And so we want to get an insight into what the economic forecast looks like for us. Good to have you with us. Appreciate you joining us, Mike.
Happy New Year, Dave.
It's such a joy. I'm honest to say a thank you to you and share this with everyone. The partnership we have with the MBA, I'm so grateful for it. It's been a great partnership and I want to keep it alive for many, many years. I so much respect what the whole organization does for our industry. And I don't know that people can really fully understand it unless you've been in the industry for a number of years and realize how many moving pieces there are to this industry and how important Mortgage Bankers Association of America is to keeping our housing finance system alive and viable. So thank you to Bob Brooksmith, to yourself and the entire executive team. Before we get into the economic forecast and some of the other stuff, what's your thoughts? How's the MBA looking at it?
So in terms of conference season, we're going to have our commercial conference in February, and then we're going to have a residential focused conference in April. Both of them are going to be virtual, obviously still living with the pandemic situation as it is. But for anyone that got to attend our virtual annual conference, we have really invested a lot in the platform. So it's not a Zoom meeting. This is a much higher end production, and I think really results in a much better experience for conference participants. So excited about both of these events, but to your point, David, the entire staff at MBA cannot wait to get back out on the road and actually see our members, interact with folks across the industry, and put on the standard raft of events that we usually have going. But for now, that's our plans for the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's probably the reality we're going to be living with for a little longer, but such an amazing job you guys have done putting this together. So kudos out to your whole team. And we could start naming individuals that have done it, but it is really an all-out team effort. The preparation that went into the annual conference was extraordinary. I thought it was really well done and I encourage people to check it out. But we want to get on focusing on the economic forecast. So let's get started. You look at the pace of home sales and originations. What do we have to expect in 2021? Let's go to the market, the size, the potential.
Yeah. So obviously 2020 was one for the record books. So our estimate is that the industry did $3.6 trillion in volume last year. So $2.2 trillion in refi, $1.4 in purchase. So just a phenomenal year. We think on the purchase side, it's going to go higher. Just the level of housing demand out there is extraordinarily strong right now, that you have this tailwind of millennials reaching peak first-time homebuyer age. You have extraordinarily low mortgage rate, and that demand we don't see going lower anytime soon. And we're forecasting that purchase volume in 2021, almost $1.6 trillion, will be an all-time high. Now, on the refi side, continues to just roll along based upon record low mortgage rates. And we think that wave will keep going through the first half of the year. But then we're forecasting a fairly sharp fall off in refi volume as we get into the second half. We just expect that with mortgage rates going even just a bit higher, you know, maybe half a point higher from where they are today, that refinance volume is going to fall off very, very sharply in the second half of the year. And we'll be back to a purchase dominated market the way we had in 2018.
Yeah. When you look at the purchase market and the demographics, I absolutely agree with you that we're going to see in ourselves a good amount of growth. Now, we're focusing immediately on 2021. But as you look forward in time, is this strong purchase market going to continue for the next 4 or 5 years? And how much does the administration will have an impact on that growth?
Yeah, great question. So anybody who's heard one of my talks know that I always pull out this stat, which is one of my favorite statistics out there, that you know currently there's 4.7 million 29-year-olds in this country. So that's the single largest age cohort. And you may doubt a lot of my forecasts, but you know, a year from now, those 29-year-olds are going to be 30, right? And they will continue to get older each year. Peak first-time homebuyer age in this country is 32 or 33. So as that large cohort continues to inch forward, we're just going to see stronger and stronger demand each year. They're not all going to be homeowners, but they're all going to live somewhere. And whether you're financing their purchase or financing their landlord's purchase, there's going to be a lot of mortgages made to buy those homes. So that's the positive. And to your point, that's going to go out through 2024, 2025. That's the kind of time frame that demographics are going to be a positive. We got a couple of constraints, though. One,
okay,
is just we don't have enough houses. We had supply constraints last year before the pandemic. Then in the pandemic, builders really were limited in how much they could put up in terms of new units by just safety concerns in March, April, May, until they figured out how to do that safely. So we now are in a situation where demand is running well ahead of supply. You know, Matt mentioned the 10% plus year-over-year home price growth. That's completely unsustainable, particularly if we're counting on growing first-time home buyers to push this market along. We need builders to pick up the pace. Luckily, we're seeing that. If you look at permits or housing starts on the single-family side, you know, they're up about 30% year-on-year. On the existing side, we're at an all-time low in terms of month supply in the market, only 2.3 months of supply. So a lot of that also was a number of owners just didn't feel comfortable listing their home last spring and didn't want to have an open house given the pandemic situation. Hopefully by this spring, with the vaccine in place, we will have turned the corner there. We'll get more existing units on the market. We'll get more new homes built, and that'll alleviate some of that supply pressure. You know, ideally, you want home prices growing basically in line with income growth. So, you know, 3-4% per year would be a more sustainable pace. And that's our forecast. But if that doesn't happen, that's going to be a constraint.
Well, you've been accurate in your forecast so many times, especially as you get into some of the analysis that goes into this, which is the research part of the Department of the MBA and what you're tracking. I remember you spoke 2 years ago, you were talking about the same issue. And you said what was a really interesting thing was the building supply. But you were talking about one of them, the issues was the material. And then the other one was labor. So we have builders now stepping it up and wanting to build more homes. But what about material and the labor availability? So many exited the labor market when they slowed it down. What are you thinking about material wood, lumber, all the things that go into a new home, and then those that are building the homes? What's your thought?
Great question, David. So my colleague, Rob Dietz, who's the chief economist at the National Association of Home Builders, he and I chat all the time. He's an incredibly bright guy. And he put out a blog last year showing that as builders were pushing down the accelerator, lumber prices had their largest four-month increase in history, right? So absolutely, builders are running into constraints in terms of the cost of their inputs like lumber. And then also, you know, we've just got this shortage of skilled trades folks that are carpenters, plumbers, electricians, drywallers, roofers, framers, you name it. There's not enough of those people to go around. Now, making lemonade out of lemons right now, I think that the only advantage that we have right now compared to a couple of years ago is when we were at a 50-year low in the unemployment rate, builders were having to compete against many other sectors of the economy to try to get some additional workers. Mm-hmm. Now we're at a 6.7% unemployment rate. We got a weaker overall job market, so maybe they'll have a bit more success bringing some folks from other sectors of the economy into the construction sector. We certainly need it, but the skilled portion of it is important too. It takes some time to build those skills, but you know, for the long term, we need a larger construction labor force to be able to support the demand that we're talking about.
It goes back to employment, then we should be hopefully see people that are unemployed heading back into the building side of it. So that'd be interesting. You guys do the affordability index. I want to jump over to that right now. What's your prediction on affordability index? I mean, because lumber costs are going up, the labor that's coming in, and that's going to just challenge the affordability index.
I mean, affordability is always a three-legged stool, right? You look at what's happening with home prices. And as I mentioned, you know, they're up much faster than is going to be sustainable in the long run. So, you know, 10% plus year on year. Then you look at mortgage rates. You know, that's extraordinarily beneficial right now, right? With all-time lows,
right.
Freddie Mac's last reading below 2.7% for a 30-year. So that's helping. Then the third leg of the stool is what's going on with household income. So April of last year, unemployment rate jumped up to almost 15%. That was essentially a situation where wages weren't going to grow at all. It has since recovered, as I said, down to 6-7, and we see it getting down to about 5% by the end of 2021. And that's consistent with wage growth beginning to pick up again. So that's going to help. But you know, really the one you got to watch is that home price figure and the inventory, the month supply figure. We need month supply to go up. We need the pace of home price growth to come down. Otherwise, you're just going to lock first-time buyers out of the market.
I'm looking at all your data that you shared with me, and it's just there's so many places we go with that. I want to jump back to originations because it's one of the questions that are coming in from some of our listeners right now. You talk about it coming off slightly, but if I understand you correctly from your notes, it's still going to be the strongest or the second highest year if your forecast is true that we've had in the past 16 years. These are still extraordinary numbers, even though it might be off slightly because of the refinances.
Yeah. A $2.8 trillion year is nothing to be upset about. But by the same token, the way this industry operates, right? That if lenders are geared up, have the capacity to do $3.6 trillion, and if in 2021 we're going to do $2.7, $2.8 trillion, that's a big adjustment, right? And if you're moving from one where it's primarily refi inbound phone calls to one that's primarily purchase, where you have to have built up those relationships with realtors and builders to be able to source the business, that is quite a change in the way you're running a lending operation. And then at the same time, we haven't talked about this yet, the servicing side has all kinds of challenges, right? And so I think from a lender's point of view, yes, at the end of the year, it will have been a very solid year in terms of volume, but you know, sailing analogy, right? You're going to be tacking back and forth as the wind is changing on you and mm-hmm. you know, redeploying your labor and technology assets to whatever the topic becomes in terms of the biggest fire you're trying to put out. So I think it's going to be a very challenging year from that perspective, but
servicing.
Do expect it's going to be a very profitable year.
Right. And I want to get into servicing. Let's talk about borrower delinquencies. We've seen some improvement, but talk about where you see the delinquencies going and actually the cost of servicing overall as a result of this. Your thoughts?
Yeah. So, you know, we do our national delinquency survey on a quarterly basis, and that just for folks that don't track it, that really is a servicer-focused survey mm-hmm. looking at were the payments made or not. So whether the borrower was in forbearance or not, If they didn't make the payment, it's counted as delinquent in the survey. And what that view shows is that overall delinquencies are up, but not the levels that we saw back in the great financial crisis.
Right.
But if you look just at the FHA book, FHA delinquency rates at about 15.5% are as high as they've ever been. And it really speaks to the nature of the pandemic, right? It has shut down service-oriented businesses across the country. And many of the folks that work in those service occupations probably more likely to be an FHA borrower than someone like you and I, Dave, who can work more effectively remotely than someone has to do face-to-face work. So that is where we're seeing the bulk of the distress in the FHA portion of the ownership market and then on the renter side as well. Going into next year, assuming that the job market does recover as we're forecasting, those new delinquencies will come down, but you're going to have people that are just way behind in their payments and just a question of, are they going to be able to reattain their own job? Did their employer go out of business? They can't go back to their old job. They get to search for a new one. Maybe they have to search in a whole different sector of the economy. There's going to be a lot of work on the servicing side, helping borrowers as much as the industry can to help them get back on their feet.
Someone just texted me, how could I get the latest study that you did on the servicing side released? Is that fairly recent data, or when is the next servicing study coming up?
So for folks that want to participate with their 2020 data, they should sign up now. So it's the servicing operations study. The actual forum, the event, takes place usually in May. But to your point, obviously, cost of service had been relatively steady. Going into the pandemic, delinquency rates were at their lowest level in 40 years. And that much higher level of performing servicing helps to bring that cost of service down. When we're looking ahead into 2021, at least on an operational basis, we expect those costs are going to go up just because with those higher levels of delinquency throughout the whole year, that servicing business is going to be more expensive. The revenue on the servicing side has been relatively strong because average loan size keeps going up with those home price gains I'm talking about. So all in, servicing had been doing well the last couple of years on an operational basis. On a financial base, obviously some of the hits to MSR values from faster prepay speeds impacted the financial income coming from servicing. 2021, again, if our forecast is right, refi slow, maybe MSR values come back a bit, but again, that'll be offset by that higher cost of servicing that we're talking about.
I want to move over to profitability. We saw the high watermark and net pre-tax profitability for mortgage lenders. What are you predicting as far as our earnings for 2021? Are we going to keep good opportunity for us to stay as strong as they have been?
So I think that's going to be a real interesting dynamic. So what we saw from March on was that spreads between mortgage rates and treasury rates were just extraordinarily wide. And so the secondary marketing income just really fueling these fantastic levels of profitability for lenders really had been asking all of my contacts of the industry, including folks like Matt, sort of, where do you think this is headed? And there was a sense from many folks I talked to that it was a bit on a knife edge. Lenders were certainly enjoying the wider spreads that they were seeing in the market. But there was a sense that given the unbelievable competitiveness in this industry, that if there was a bit of a slowdown in volume at all, there was an expectation those spreads would come in quickly. And I think we saw that the end of last year, November, December, just with the typical seasonal slowdown in purchase volume, many lenders saw their pipeline begin to come down a bit. And they allowed mortgage rates to stay flat or even drop at a time when treasury rates were rising. So we saw that spread, which had been abnormally wide, come back to, you know, almost typical levels. And so I think the question over the next several months is, you know, one, are treasury rates going to keep rising? I think so, but lots of uncertainty there. But two, sort of at what level of spread do lenders stop sort of absorbing that narrowing in spread and start allowing mortgage rates to go up? And, you know, we think that'll be happening to a greater extent in the second half of the year. So to your main question, expect profitability to stay solid through the first half of the year, but then things get a little tighter in that second half of the year at the same time as volume falls off.
Which goes nicely into the last question. And you're saying prepare for rising mortgage rates. And so it doesn't sound like it's going to have a negative impact on the overall volumes based on what you have, what you're projecting here. So it seems like it's fairly modest, if I'm looking at this correctly, relatively modest increase.
Yeah, so, you know, the Freddie Mac rate was about 2.7 last week. We see it increasing to about 3.2 by the end of 2021. So half a point. And to our discussion on the purchase market, that's not going to be a huge headwind for affordability and for first-time buyers. But I do think it's going to be a fairly dramatic impact on refis. And not only do you have that Freddie Mac rate that I'm talking about, which is really a purchase-only rate, but then think about the adverse market fee that the GSEs have imposed on refis. So, you know, the rate that your refi borrower is going to see by the end of the year is 3.4, 3.5, somewhere in that neighborhood. So that's going to be enough to take $900 billion off of refis in 2021 compared to what we saw in 2020.
So as we wrap this up, what are the words of wisdom that you have in light of your forecast?
So I think, you know, I talked about first half versus second half of this year and how they're really going to feel very different. Your first half really is still going to be dominated by refis. Second half becomes a true purchase market. And, you know, all the changes that any seasoned mortgage lender knows come along with that kind of a shift. But I think also I've talked about, you know, the next 3 months where the pandemic sure seems to still be driving almost every decision and every action and, you know, every stat in the economy, to the succeeding 9 months where it's not going to be normal, but it's going to start feeling a whole lot closer to normal than it has for the last 9 months. So something to look forward to. You know, maybe you get your employees back in your office again to some extent, or you know, maybe you actually see a customer face to face and all those things that we've all been looking forward to. And David, to your point, maybe we actually get together to have a beer at a conference. Would absolutely love that.
I certainly hope so. But anyway, Michael, thank you so much for being here with us. I appreciate, again, what you and Marina, Bob, and the entire team do for us there at the MBA. Oh, one question just came in. Dave, you didn't ask the big question. No, I thought interest rates was the big question. What are you seeing as far as the technology? Everyone's focused on technology. Which one should I do? Any new technology coming in that's going to be groundbreaking?
You know, I'll just make a short pitch for MSMO. I think MSMO, our industry standards organization, has just done a fantastic job getting a standard out there for remote online notarization, which has just been a key technology throughout the whole pandemic. And I fully expect that even once life gets back to quote normal, Ron is going to be with us to stay, because it has been, I think, just transformative in the way closings can happen. Beyond that, my seat on the MERS membership committee, just seeing those e-note registrations explode exponentially. Oh, again, that's another trend that I think has been accelerated by the pandemic, and certainly think that'll continue.
We could go on and on and on, but we're out of time. Michael, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, David.
We've had as our special guest, Dr. Michael Frentantoni, and I encourage you to catch the MBA forecast. There's so many tools and so much studies and things that are on the website that are just so powerful that can help you plan your business. I encourage you to get out there and call into the MBA, get on their website, take a look at all the information that's there. It's been a joy to have you as our listeners joining us in on our discussion. Next week, we will have Dan Putney of Finastra joining us, talking about the survey. It's really interesting data. We talked about it when we had Steve Hoke on a while back. We'd seen some insights into that survey, and it's really interesting. We're going to be sharing some of that data with you next week. We'll want to check that out. So thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, as well as the MBA, as well as Indicom, Accelerate, Mobility RE, Modex. We could go on and on. Check out all of our sponsors on our website. Good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week and a happy new year. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.